Welcome to Pouring Over Pages, a podcast of words and wine. I'm Alexa.
And I'm Maritza.
Time to get lit on literature. Woo! Pop bottles, read novels.
So exciting. Yeah. Well, thank you all for being with us, for still being with us. Mm-hmm. We're so excited to start 2024 off with, I think, such an important book, such a fun book, such a nostalgic book, such a juicy book. It's really, I think, the perfect way for us to kick back up after a little vacation, a little bit of rest time. It's just like the perfect thing to discuss.
No, totally. And it feels like such a guilty pleasure kind of book. Just one of those books that you're like, I gotta read it just because, you know?
It was one of those books that I think people were not going to be super receptive of at the beginning. And then once we saw the amount of hype, and actually I shouldn't say we, because I bought it the day it came out. But once people saw the hype, I think they jumped on the train and it was so worth it. And for those of you who haven't checked out the episode title, we're talking about, of course, Britney Spears' tell-all memoir, The Woman in Me, that came out in late 2023. And I have so much to say about this book.
So much. Gasp.
It's like, it was like gasp after gasp. A lot of people complain that maybe it wasn't as tell-all-y as mm-hmm. they expected. We'll get into that. But I actually think it was a really great way for her to tell her side of the story. And I think really important for young women like us who grew up listening to Britney Spears and who grew up watching her in the limelight. And her experience, I think, very much shaped our relationship with mm-hmm. other women, with the media, with the way that we felt women should act because of how she was portrayed. And so to me, she's a seminal figure. And I don't feel silly saying that. No. Like, she's one of the most important women, like, of my young life, because mm-hmm. this is who I saw get scrutinized, villainized, but also loved for very formative years of my life. So this was just like a big deal for young Maritza. This book was a big deal for me and very much came kind of full circle, I would say. But before we dive into some of the very juicy questions and some of the things that we absolutely have to discuss, we are sipping on a very delicious rosé today.
Yes. So as you can imagine, pairing wine and Britney Spears was a bit challenging for me. So this is where I landed. We are sipping on some rosé from Josef Evmoser, and it is made from the grape Zweigelt. And it's delicious, it's fun, and I will dive into why I chose it, because you just won't think of it at first, but I will get in there and I will convince you on this.
We're looking forward to it, because for me, I mean, not that I care, I'll drink rosé any day. I don't need an excuse. I don't need a reason. But in a way, like, before we even started recording the podcast, we were talking about how rosé is this kind of like feminine drink that mm-hmm. people associate it with, like, femininity and summer and, you know, like flowers and yeah. outside and the heat. And we're drinking this in December and talking about a book that, like, made me cry. And
so I know. It feels weird.
It feels weird, but it kind of doesn't, because in a way it's like, it kind of represents to us like what femininity means to us, mm-hmm. like how we've redefined it through the podcast, how Britney has done it, like how now I see like men drinking rosé and I'm like, yeah,
yes,
you can do that. Everyone no one's going to think it's weird.
Yeah.
Took a while to get there, but we're getting
there. But we're there. The men are drinking and wearing pink.
I love it. Me too. I can't wait for spring. Well, overall thoughts on the book. I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I enjoyed the book. I was curious about who her ghostwriter would be and how it would turn out. We all watch Britney on Instagram. We all see the crazy captions, the Hayward emojis,
the knives.
We see how she writes on Instagram. So I was very curious as to how a novel would be written in Britney's voice. And they did a fantastic job. I think I read this book in 48 hours because the sentences were very short and to the point, but effective, illustrated all that Britney, I'm sure, was thinking and feeling. So it didn't, I don't want to say it was dumbed down so that I could get through it quick, but it was simple enough, but yet telling enough that I could breeze through it. And also, I mean, like you, I was obsessed with Britney Spears. I was dying to know her side of the story because we heard so much from the media about everyone else's point of view about Britney. and her father and her damn sister and the whole fam, Justin. Like, so I was excited to see her side because we, as young girls, were looking up to this woman and she's being scrutinized from all sides. And I just wanted to hear her voice and not through her Instagram page.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And that brings us to really the first thing that I wanted to discuss, which you just touched upon, and that's the writing style and the structure mm-hmm. of the book, which I agree with you. I think it was really successful. You know, people who are picking this book up are not expecting to read something where she's quoting Deleuze and discussing panopticon theory. You know, like, it's okay. That's not what we signed up for. That's not the ride that I paid for. But I think that it was written in a way that feels authentic. Mm-hmm. I will say that.
For
sure. I think it very much feels like her voice. When you hear her interviews, when you hear her speak, it's not really all that different to the book. The Instagram captions are like full of emojis and like kind of
erratic,
a little bit of like nonsense, but I think it's part of the allure, right? And so I wasn't expecting that, but I was expecting something that was going to feel simple, easy to digest, and that allowed for me to just get the facts. I think that that's what she wanted. There's nothing decorated in terms mm-hmm. of the language, which I also think is successful. I don't believe, and this is just like a general note, but I don't believe that every time you pick up a book, it has to be something super challenging or, you know, nonfiction mm-hmm. or something that's going to teach you something, or like, it doesn't always have to be theory. I think that as long as you're picking something up and you're enjoying it and you're allowing the story to help you reflect on either your own life or situations that you've been in, that you're doing something good. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want people to think that because we're saying, oh, you know, the book was simply written and digestible, that's not us saying that it was dumb or that it's not worthy of your time.
No.
You know, quite the opposite, actually. Like, you read it in 2 days. I think I read it in like 3 or 4 days. It was really easy. And I appreciated that because also I needed that kind of palate cleanser. I needed the kind of nonfiction that I remember because mm-hmm. I lived it. You know,
yes.
It's like when you're watching The Crown, like, you know, all these things have happened. Like, you remember Diana dying. You remember, you know, Prince William being like the ultimate like heartthrob. You remember it. But then when you see it like editorialized, you're like, oh, this is such an interesting perspective. I felt the same way about this. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember so many of these things. I remember her being hospitalized. I remember the conservatorship beginning. I remember Kevin Federline kicking her out of the house. I remember the shaving of the head, the umbrella. I remember all of it. So I think that the language had to also be simple for that reason, because we lived it.
Yeah.
I don't think there are going to be a lot of people reading this book who didn't live or remember what she discusses.
Yeah.
I think that's an easy way to kind of think about it.
For sure. Most definitely.
But one of the things that like really broke my heart and I think is really important about this book is that she talks about her youth and how the sexualization of her and her body and the perception of her to the public, how that was there from the very beginning and how it was so normalized. And I think that that chapter, I mean, it is written like loosely in chronological order, but I think that those chapters that tackle her youth and her as like a sexualized young person, they actually very much explain her behavior now.
Yes.
And she alludes
so
to
much.
It, right? Like, she alludes to the fact that her videos on Instagram are her being like, I'm taking full control of my body, of my movement, of my persona, of my image, because for my entire life, that was dictated for me. I was a thing that was put out into the world and I was managed by other people and I was sexualized by men in a way that I don't think most young people can even survive,
no,
frankly.
At all. No, and I think she talked about a magazine cover. I want to say it was the Teletubby one, if I'm thinking correctly,
that was
or
really
something.
Fucking gross.
Like, yeah, just things like that. Like, you know, they wanted her to be an inspiration to young girls, but then threw her on and did shit like that. And like, the bodysuits and always making sure that she was super fit and like
right.
eating nothing and just putting her out. It was just such a juxtaposition between like, they wanted her to be both things and you can't be both things in that way.
You can't be both things. And that kind of reminded me, you watched Barbie, right?
I still haven't.
You still haven't watched it. Okay. Well, there's a moment in the movie where America Ferrera gives this like speech.
I read the speech. Yes.
You read the speech. And it's like every oxymoron that is put on women. Like you have to be thin, but you can't be too thin. Mm-hmm. And you have to be healthy, but you can't say that you want to be thin. And you have to be grateful, but you also have to be part of the sisterhood. And you have to stand out, but not too much. And like all these things that are actually just impossible standards. And none of us can live up to them. That's just a fact. And so I think it's so, so, so true that like she had to be this role model to young girls, but also had to be a sex pot for older men, dudes. Which is... Ew. Fucking disgusting.
She's like 16, guys. She's jailbait. What the fuck?
And on page 61, like she really grossed me out. She was like, meanwhile, I started to notice more and more older men in the audience. And sometimes it would freak me out to see them leering at me like I was some kind of Lolita fantasy for them, especially when no one could seem to think of me as both sexy and capable. If I was sexy, they seemed to think I must be stupid. And I think every single woman reads that and is like, Yeah.
Get you. I can't possibly be good looking, attractive, sexy, and successful or smart.
And you can't be smart. And even just like the whole like intelligence thing, the capability thing, it's like they don't believe you're any of those things, even if you're hideous.
Yeah.
And of course, I say hideous in like a subjective way, but it's so unbelievable. It's so unbelievable that a woman could be all of these things. And I don't know how to explain it, but it's both things, right? Like she can't be both a sex pot for old men and a perfect role model for young girls. But at the same time, we're talking about how all of these things that are set upon us are just never going to be enough and we cannot accomplish all of them. So there is this argument to be made that you should just be yourself and just everyone else can fuck off.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that's really what she's kind of saying.
Basically. And let's think back. We're talking about it in the context of today where maybe more so, you know, women are taking back their sexual power and they're empowered to do as they please. And it's not as much as a taboo, I would say. But this was back in the 90s and the 2000s when that shit would not go down. Like it was not that way.
No, I mean, it's when like you had reporters asking her questions like, are your breasts fake?
Yeah. Shit like that.
That would never fucking fly today. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
But the way that she was humiliated and the way that she was just used as an object of, you know, for entertainment, it didn't matter what they did to her as long as it sold papers and got people to watch the interview on TV. And they also painted her out to be, and I think it's interesting, you know, like that we chose this quote to be the kind of like, hey guys, listen to the episode. But when she says, why did everyone treat me, even when I was a teenager, like I was dangerous? And I think it's very much about that. I think it's about the fact that she needed to be kept in a certain box and a certain cookie cutter shape. Because without that, the image of her could very much be dangerous. It very well could be dangerous, right? Like this is a young girl who's really talented, who can sing and dance and can captivate the whole world and can make young women feel like they can do anything. Yes. I mean, she was like an idol to me. You know, she made me feel like there was nothing that I could not do. And that's actually a really terrifying thing for a mainstream society and for a patriarchal society that believes that we should remain in a certain place.
Yes, seen and not heard.
Exactly. And unfortunately for this world, we have a podcast. And
we are loud as fuck on our podcast.
Exactly.
And in person.
It's just wild. Like I get why they painted her out as something that needed to be restrained, that needed to be controlled. Because without that, what you had was someone making women feel good about themselves.
Oof. That's a tough one.
That is a real threat.
Terrifying.
If I've ever heard one.
Another thing, speaking about femininity and independence and what, another portion of the book that made me feel really bad, like for her, like I kept over Rosita, was the whole Justin Timberlake moments. Because from the outside looking in, like as a young girl, like, oh my tank on. Look at them in their denim. Oh, like it broke my heart to hear how that shit went down and the double standards that played a role there.
100%. And it's a really difficult thing to process because we're also, as you said, we're discussing this in 2023, 2024, a time where things have definitely changed and certain things that were considered taboo are now more normalized. And with the rise of social media, I think these conversations have become a little bit easier to come by. But the whole Justin Timberlake thing is extremely complicated. And the double standard is, I suppose, a good place to start. She says in the book at one point, she says, looking back, I think that both Justin and Kevin were very clever. They knew what they were doing and I played right into it. And when I say Kevin, I mean Kevin Federline. We'll get to him. We'll get to him. But it's so true. There was this ability through the media to care for and justify the acts of men and to villainize women. And this was a time, I mean, let's be real, when like hating women was very cool.
Yeah.
And very much mainstream. Like, you know what example comes to my head immediately? When Eminem was just shitting on Kim.
Yes.
Remember
yes,
that?
Yes, yes. There's a whole song and about him yes. murdering his wife, like putting her yes. in the trunk and taking her out. And,
yes.
and I'm sad to say I probably know most of those lyrics.
Yeah, me too.
Because I listened to that whole album we back and forth. We're products of our environment. Of our
time. Like, you know, and that's not to say that I don't see how wrong it
it's
is.
It's so bad. Like, know? I shouldn't know
but
that.
But it's like, this was... very
it was appropriate.
Appropriate at the time. This was common at yeah. the time. And this was a moment where it was really easy to villainize women because also that was a time when the media started to shapeshift, right? We had the rise of the internet. Yeah. We had much more easy access to news. Obviously, nothing remotely close to where we are today. But that rise allowed for there to be more storytelling, more nuance. And of course, with that comes more shape-shifting mm-hmm. and curating of stories. And it was so easy to villainize women back then. And then when you pair that with a patriarchal structure that is already telling you, whether it be in your home or through the radio or through the television or through school.
Or through TRL.
Or through TRL or anywhere else. It's basically telling you that if you don't act a certain way, that you will be hated by men and that you're already hated by other women.
Absolutely. Like the whole Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, you know, head on rivalry.
And that was
kind of
made up.
It was totally made up. It was almost like people feeding to each other in the paper, like why they hate each other. And it's not even really real.
And I think we've talked about this before in a past episode that when you have two things next to each other, the natural response is to compare them.
Mm-hmm.
But when people are pitted against yeah. one another, that's a very different approach to entertainment and to storytelling. And it's just, it was easy back then, I think, to pit women against mm-hmm. each other. It was like Britney versus Christina versus Jessica Simpson versus Mandy
Pink.
Moore.
I think Pink even has a line Pink. In her song, I'm not like Britney, she's so pretty or something like that. I'm pretty sure.
And it's like, Pink, girl.
Girl.
You were doing your own thing.
You're very different
than
all
these women. You were very different. Just do your thing. We love you for it. But like, you don't need to go down that route. That was difficult for me because I loved all of them.
Yeah.
Like I was that girl. Like I had all of their albums.
I did too.
So, but it's so true. And then like going back to the whole Justin thing, it was like, it was so easy to make him the victim.
Yeah.
And the Golden Crimea Boy. River.
Oof. Oh God.
We need to talk about that. The Crimea River thing. And she addresses this in the book really well, where she's like, he had a lookalike that really just like looked exactly
it looked just like her.
With a little hat.
Yeah, and everything, the little low-rise jeans.
Yes,
stuff.
It's exactly like her. And he was like, and he basically made himself the victim of a story that wasn't real.
Such a gaslighter.
And what I think is really bad bitch of Britney is that she talks to us in the book about how often Justin cheated on mm-hmm. a regular basis, right? Mm-hmm. All the time. And she's like, yeah, and you know what? I cheated once because I made out with somebody.
Exactly.
And she's you're like
I made out with a dancer.
You're like, girl, hardly equivalent, but we appreciate your honesty.
She's
like,
so
it was
honest.
So cute. I was like, God, I don't even qualify that.
No,
compared
me
to
either.
What Justin did. Like, girl, I wouldn't have even mentioned it. Like,
I kissed him. While Justin's like, out there fucking all the women
exactly,
in Orlando.
Exactly. And they were like living in a house together. And
yes.
that was a big secret because nobody knew about
no,
that.
No, I had no clue.
That house was like a sacred place for them. And I knew about like the Orlando connection, obviously, because that's, I think, where the, like where the boy bands were based.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Backstreet Boys and then NSYNC, O-Town, yeah. All of them, that Lou Pearlman, another problematic figure.
May he rest in.
In hell.
Hell. Yeah. He's dead, right?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So I was like, that would be weird if I just. Like...
No, he's fucking dead. I remember the back. I think AJ did an interview and he's like, yep, he's dead.
Yep. He's dead. Anyway.
Anyway.
Anyway, thank you so much for being here. But it's like, that was such a, that was a major moment for me actually, mm-hmm. when I realized like, oh, they had been living together and they felt the need to keep that as like a total secret, yeah. because that was very taboo, right? Mm-hmm. They were unmarried. They were young. They had this very public relationship, but it was very much defined by the media and by what we wanted it to be. And that's something that I reflected a lot about when I was reading the book, is like, that relationship was what we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
It was never authentically put forth to us. It was always like a projection. Like the denim moment is a big part of that.
Yeah.
You know,
very like, here's your pop star Barbie and Ken.
Exactly.
Worship them.
Exactly. And they're like white, attractive,
yeah.
young people.
Seemingly perfect. Aspirational.
Who are here to entertain us.
Of course, they don't have sex. They don't live together, but they're together. Right.
Exactly.
Like, it's very like wholesome Americana.
Exactly. And this whole concept of like virginity. First of all, I don't like that word because it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It's ignorant. It's offensive and it's dumb and it's rooted in patriarchy in a way that I don't agree with. But the fact that they would ask her.
Yeah.
Openly.
It's like.
And regularly. Like, who the fuck are you?
So perverted.
Asking me that question. It's really perverted. Very oftentimes it was like men asking yeah. her these questions in interviews.
Disgusting.
And of course, no one would ever dare to ask Justin Timberlake mm-hmm. that, right? Because he's free to do whatever he wants. But oh, he's the sad little boy victim who got cheated on.
Yeah.
And I say that in very dramatic air quotes. It was just the double standard is so frustrating. And I cannot imagine like being Britney Spears and knowing all these truths. And I think most of us knew these truths internally. But that we knew these things, that she knew it, and that it took years
yeah.
for her to finally be able to be like, by the way, guys, this is what really happened, and this is how I was treated.
It's a lie.
and then you couple that with all the clips of the interviews that you remember, and all the questions that she was asked, and all the ways that she was portrayed, and you're just like, how has this woman survived? And I'm not exaggerating. How do you survive that? Because I don't think a lot of people can.
No, I don't. It's a lot. It's a lot to stomach. And then on top of it all, he breaks up with her in a text.
What a fucking loser.
Loser. What a fucking piece of shit.
Loser. I am really.
I hope his. What does he have? Daughters? Does he have daughters? Do we know?
I know he has a son.
Well, I hope whatever children he has give him hell.
Give him hell. What a fucking piece of shit. That was a revelatory moment for me, I might add, because I was very much a JT girl.
I was an NSYNC girl. But both things can be true. You can look back and be like, he was my boy band icon of mm-hmm. my youth, and he was a piece of shit.
And I have matured yeah. and now see him as said piece of shit.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of that.
Exactly.
I do not make excuses for any man, let alone that one. that was like a hell no for me. But I was just like, damn. Like at least I was like kind of like prepped for it because like so much shit has come out about Justin over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
That the book is not like what did it for me.
I knew
for years. I was like, oh wait, this guy's a total son of a bitch. Do you remember when he was like caught like canoodling with some woman?
Yeah, recently from a movie or something, when he was married to Jessica Biel.
He's still married to her.
Yeah. He's canoodling and it was like no big deal. And I'm like, you're married.
I would have kicked that motherfucker out of my house so mm-hmm. fucking fast. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have had time to pack a bag.
You cry me a river now, JT.
Mm-hmm. Cry me a river now, bitch. I don't fucking care.
Jeez.
So that was tough.
I'm sure.
For me.
It's call my therapist and be like, so
that was really
JT.
That was really rough. But no, I think it's important.
Yeah. No, and then it also it wasn't lost on me the fact that he got away with it both with Britney and you're like, she's young, she's done, like air quotes thing, but also with Janet Jackson with the whole Super Bowl thing.
Yes.
So established you know, well-known, rich, popular, famous, the Jackson sister.
Right.
And he did the same fucking thing. It's just wild how the media back then was.
Well, that's an interesting one because it's almost like we did that to her.
Yeah.
He participated.
He didn't take blame but he didn't also be like, yo guys, lay off her. It was right. A malfunction.
But it wasn't.
It was like
there was a star
on her nipple
was obviously planned. We need to stop this like narrative. My god, it was an accident. Because I can tell you right now that I don't have stars on my nipples just in case somebody rips my top off. That was so annoying. Like instead of just being like, hey guys, that was a poorly executed, silly performance.
Yeah. It was a PR stunt that we didn't know would go so awry.
And we regret it and we're sorry. We.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. The we.
That's it. But instead it became this like, oh no, it was an accident. And poor Justin.
Exactly.
And I'm like, what do you mean poor Justin? His tit wasn't out. And he didn't get shunned by like the entire United States for years because of some stupid PR bullshit stunt. Yeah. Like just the fucking double standard is unreal. And it's so fucking frustrating to me. And for some weird reason, Justin Timberlake is just like the foil for every single woman that is treated like shit in the media.
Basically.
And then you're like, oh my God, the double standard, look at it. Oh, and what a shock that Justin is involved. Like, it's just, it's wild to me. But I think that that moment, that era, that like 90s pop, early 2000s pop moment that all of us look at and we're like, oh my God, it was so amazing. And I used to come, you know, run home and like watch TRL to watch the same 10 music videos.
Every week.
You know, like we romanticize it for good reason. It was a fun time. It was a good time. And I will die on this hill, but some of the best music came out of the 90s and 2000s.
Fuck yes.
It's still what I listen to.
The kids sample it now.
Yeah, the
That's
kids
how
fucking
you know
sample it.
It lasts.
It's fucking good
it
shit.
It slaps, as it's, some of them say. Question mark.
It slaps. I just felt old saying that. Yeah. But it's like, I get the romanticizing that moment. I do it. I will continue to do it because it's nostalgic. It feels good. When I hear that music, I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But I also acknowledge how much I think that shifted my perspective, how much it built me into who I am and why I reject so many ideas and so many, especially patriarchal ideas that are so normalized in our society. Yeah. Because again, I saw Britney Spears get treated like absolute shit. And I saw that in the media. And I always, like, even as a young girl who maybe hadn't fully developed her critical thinking skills, I was always like, this doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong.
Why
here.
Are they asking her that?
Yeah.
You know, why would they ask her and not him that? And then like, just the sparking of those questions was enough for me to be like, something is wrong here and she deserves better, which means that I deserve better, which means that I won't tolerate this when I'm Britney's age.
Yeah.
That's really who she meant for me. So like, I'm not exaggerating. I said she's like literally one of the most important women in my life.
Yeah.
I think all young women can say that. If you listen to Britney Spears, if you can fucking belt out her music to this day, you cannot tell me that she is not an icon in your life.
Yeah. No, and I am so thankful for her to have given us Michelle Williams reading the audiobook and doing Justin's imitation of Full Shiz.
Genuine.
It's the black fit.
That was
iconic.
So fucking iconic and bizarre. I was like, first of all, a man that like walks around talking like that is just like that's a big problem for me.
Oh my God.
But it's just
gold.
It's gold. And one of the things in the book that of course I have to talk about, obviously, is the revelation that she had an abortion.
Yes. That was like the only thing I didn't know. I feel like everything else in the book I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I didn't know as much how much of an asshole Kevin was. I knew he was an asshole, but not like that hardcore.
Yeah.
But the abortion was very like,
that was the big.
Yeah. The big reveal.
The big reveal. That
book.
Was like the big like bombshell moment, I think, of the book. And it broke my heart. She really goes into some serious detail and really decides that she wants to tell you everything. And I think that that's, first of all, extremely brave extremely relevant in this post-Roe Dobbs America, where just yesterday I was reading an article in The Atlantic about how the plan, really the Republican plan, is to ban abortion nationwide, and that, you know, exemptions are a sham and they were never actually designed to be implemented. And like, we're seeing what happened to Kate Cox, this, you know, young woman who had to leave the state for an abortion. So like, in the midst of all of that, like, that's always on my mind, but right now it feels extremely heavy because it's just like, it's in the media, it's on the news. I'm watching it, I'm hearing it. So I'm reading this book while a lot of these things are happening. And it gave me just this like really sad, I was like, imagine at least now someone like Kate Cox, her situation is fucking horrible. And just, it couldn't fucking be worse. But at the same time, at least now there's representation for her.
Yes.
There's support. There is a conversation around why it's so important to protect reproductive health care and why it's so important to listen to women and to let physicians do what they do. Whereas at this time, there was really nothing for her. There was no structure in place that allowed for her to get any sort of support. And as a celebrity, you can't tell anyone, because then that gets out, and then it gets out in a way that you can't control. And then it becomes a narrative that suddenly spirals into something else.
Yeah.
It's just, it's horrible. And I was just like, holy shit, this girl experienced this on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot think of anything worse.
No. And then being told what to do with your body by Justin in that instance, because she was kind of hopeful. And she's like, you know what? We'll raise the baby and this, and maybe have the family she never had.
Yeah.
And then being told like, no, this goes against our image. You have to go fix that.
And this line on page 76, I think, is probably one of the most important lines in the book. And one of the most important lines just to reflect on if you're ever having a conversation about abortion rights and reflecting on what that means. She says, I'm sure people will hate me for this, but I agreed not to have the baby. First of all, the caveat of I'm sure people will hate me for this is extremely sad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then she goes on to say, abortion was something I never could have imagined choosing for myself, but given the circumstances, this is what we did. And I think that that right there is really important, that it was not something she could have ever imagined choosing for herself. I think that's the case for a lot of women.
Yeah.
I think a lot of women would never even consider it, would never think of it. They would never want to do it. And then life happens.
Yeah.
And you are told that your baby will suffocate and die within a few hours mm-hmm. of being born. And you say, you know what? I don't want to put my baby through that. Or, oh, if you choose to have this pregnancy go to full term, you could lose your ability to have babies again, or you could go septic, or you could die.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things that like the whole concept of exceptions, they're not real. They're a sham. They were never designed to work. The exception is going to be a situation like exactly what she's describing. I could have never imagined it for myself, but this is what I chose to do. That's the exception.
Yeah.
And that's why reproductive health care has to be accessible, has to be available. And anyone who has even the faintest human heart should be able to agree with that, because this isn't about anything other than control over women. But that part really, it made me so sad. I'm sure people will hate me for this, but I agreed not to have a baby. That is a horrible caveat to have to insert into your abortion story.
It's so sad.
It's just, to me, that was kind of unfathomable. It's like, who has the right, you know, to hate you? And then she goes on to describe what I think is a horrific abortion experience.
Horrible. Like the worst I've ever heard.
Like, I've never heard of anything like this. Like, she was like, I wanted to go to the doctor. I was so scared. I lay there wondering if I was going to die. And that's because they chose to have the abortion at home. And she said, we also decided on something that in retrospect wound up being, in my view, wrong. And that was that I should not go to a doctor or a hospital to have the abortion. It was important that no one find out about the pregnancy or the abortion, which meant doing everything at home. I kept crying and sobbing until it was all over. It took hours, and I don't remember how it ended, but I do, 20 years later, remember the pain of it and the fear. And that's what happens when you shame women into having abortions at home.
Yeah.
Obviously, she probably did, you know, mifepristone.
Yes.
And misoprostol, right? She probably had an at-home abortion.
I wonder how far along she was.
But those descriptions are not that different from when you hear about the women who like used hangers at home.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Tell me that doesn't sound like something you would have read before 1973.
Yeah.
When Roe became the law of the land. It's fucking horrific to me. And I'm sorry, I will die on this hill. I will die
on
this hill
fucking hill on.
Because it's just crazy. It's fucking crazy to me that this is the way that she had to experience it. And this is a famous, powerful, influential woman with plenty of money.
Yeah.
And that's her abortion story? That should tell you about how fucked up this country is when it comes to treating women that way. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot tell me that she could not have done that in the privacy of a clinic. Yeah. Or a doctor.
Oh, I agree.
That smells to me. And now I'm just fully assuming. Do not sue me. But I'm like, that just fucking reeks of Justin being like, I don't want anyone to know.
Oh, for
so
sure.
Do it at home.
At home.
And I don't want to imitate him. I sound like an old lady.
No, it needs to be like, yo, for sure. Do this at home. For sure, my for boy.
Sure, do this at home.
JC told me I get these pills.
I don't want nobody to know, boo.
No one gotta know, girl. Let's go. I'll sing a little song for you in the bathroom. Oh, music is healing.
Okay.
Music is healing.
That part was fucking wild. So she's like bleeding on the floor, crying, thinking that she's gonna die. And he's like, hold on. I'm gonna go get my guitar.
I know what will help you. Not a medically trained professional.
No.
But
me my old playing guitar. My guitar. If there wasn't a moment to grab a man's guitar and beat the fuck out of him, that's it.
And you know it's true because it's such a random fucking thing to put in your book. Like, why would you ever put, like...
Eso no es invento.
No, at all.
Like, that 100% straight happened because she's like, you know what? I'm going to put this in the book because I need people to understand how much of a fucking douche canoe this guy was. And it was iconic.
I wonder what song it was.
Oh,
I would die to know what song it was.
It was probably like an NSYNC song.
NSYNC. Baby, I don't understand.
Just why we can't be lovers.
And I'm going to break up with you right after.
Things are getting out of hand. You know what? Maybe it works. But
trying
that was
too much, but baby, we can or can't win it.
Can't win.
Can't win.
You see?
Let it go. There you go.
If you want me, girl, let me know.
I'm down on my knees playing this guitar. We're so bad.
We just aged ourselves. Not that we hadn't from the beginning of this episode, God. But man, I know every fucking song, like every beat, I could karaoke the shit out of all this music. It's fucking wild. But apparently so can he in really distressful, horrible times.
If this is made into a movie at some point. Oh, God.
It's insane.
I can't.
It's insane. And I think, you know, like, another, like, element of the whole, like, abortion story being a secret, too, I think also has to do with the fact that then you're acknowledging a couple of things, right? You're acknowledging your loss of innocence,
mm-hmm.
in very dramatic air quotes, and you're also acknowledging that you're no longer the 17-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And this was a quote that I, like, really, like, if I could tattoo this on my face, I probably would. Said, at what point did I promise to stay 17 for the rest of my life?
Mm.
Because then she gets fucking hounded, right? Like, we move past the abortion story. We move towards her in this very strange, volatile marriage to Kevin Federline.
Horrible.
And she gains weight. Her appearance changes. And these are all things that happen because you're a human being. And your body will change and your appearance will change because you are growing.
Yeah.
You are getting older, which is a privilege. And everyone criticized her for everything. Oh, she gained weight. Okay. Oh, look at her hair. It's dark now. Okay. Oh, she had babies. So she's still chubby from the babies. It's like, fucking Christ. Like, leave her alone. Like, I am that person.
Leave Brittany alone. And we all made fun of him, but no, he was serious. He knew.
He was the Nostradamus of our time.
Yes.
Because he knew,
the
kind of fucking public lynching that this poor woman was going to experience. But this, like, whole thing, I think it really kind of goes to show that like aging in Hollywood for women is really hard, right? Like you see men, they get gray and they're like, everyone's like, oh my God, like he looks so good with his gray hair.
He's so distinguished.
He's so distinguished. But like a woman walks around with gray hair and they're like, she's old. And I'm like, no, she's fucking not. First of all, shut the fuck up. And people have a right to change. But the moment that you're out in the world that young and you're influencing people that young, people almost expect you to remain this mold. And you become this unnatural thing that cannot grow, that cannot change, that cannot develop, that cannot live a different life than what was originally intended for you. And so that really stuck with me because I think that every woman in the world can relate to that. When you're young, you're one thing, and then you grow up and people are going to look at you a certain way and you are not allowed to age or mature or change. And there's also like, there's shaming no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Right?
You're like, damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
I see it on Instagram all the time. Like, I think I saw Victoria Beckham. Like, she posted this thing on her Instagram where she was like, you know, I really want to like age, you know, gracefully. And so like, I use my skincare, whatever. And then all the comments were like, yeah, but you get Botox, bitch. And I'm like, she's allowed. Like,
let her get her Botox.
Yeah, like, it's not one or the other. Like, yeah, you can age gracefully in whatever way you're defining it as. Like,
yeah. Whatever you see fit for yourself.
And also like, that's not a, like, I mean, I think we've had this conversation, but like, we, like, you don't get Botox on your face. No one gets Botox on their face because they're trying to look younger. It's,
no,
it's an aesthetic,
yes,
thing. It's like, it's an expression line thing.
Maintenance,
it's
too.
Maintenance.
Just
it's
maintenance.
So. It's just, and it's also just like what you consider to be attractive.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's just like, I see it on social media all the time. Like, oh yeah, you can age gracefully, but that means you have to like, just let your silver hair grow.
Yeah.
And like, and not do any skincare.
And don't do any skincare or sunscreen or anything.
But
and
then
just
you
like
do
look
those
like
things and they're like, you look fucking terrible. And you're like, oh, okay. So where would you want me then?
Yeah.
Where exactly would you like me to stand?
It's so bad.
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I think that she's like the perfect example of exactly that. You can, like, I could write a PhD thesis on like how this woman is emblematic of everything that's wrong with patriarchy.
Yeah. No, for sure. And then besides for the whole aging and your body changing, she clearly was dealing with postpartum depression.
Yeah.
She was dealing with whatever mental illnesses she already had from her family, being in the spotlight, being taunted by the media. She was in a horrible, toxic marriage after breaking up with Justin, which was another toxic situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we expect her to hold it all together.
Right.
And I'm like, I felt so horrible after reading all that. I was just like, I knew she was fucked up, but I'm like, damn girl, you're not getting a break anywhere. And every single person in her life, especially men, used her.
And turned on her.
Yes. They used her until they sucked her dry and then threw her away.
Yeah. And it's fascinating when you also think about how those things led to, and this is the other major point of conversation that I want to have, which is how those things led to her conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
How many, she says this, and this is like such a fucking good point. She's like, think of how many male artists gambled all their money away. How many had substance abuse or mental health issues? No one tried to take away their control over their body and money. I didn't deserve what my family did to me. And it's true. It is about control. And she is proof of the fact that when you take away a woman's bodily autonomy, and I'm not even referring
not
to
even,
abortion
not even
for
that.
The first time ever, but like you take away her ability to drive her car,
mm-hmm.
to spend her own money, to spend time with her friends,
to eat what she wants
to eat what
or
she
doesn't
wants.
Want.
When you take that away from somebody, what you have is full control over them and over their livelihood and over every single aspect of their development. And I agree with her 100%. How many male artists have we seen fucking lose their shit?
Dude, Robert Downey Jr. is a prime example of that time. Like, the 80s,
you didn't see him
90s.
In a fucking conservatorship.
Now he's Iron Man.
Of course, because men can always redeem themselves. Mm-hmm. Women can't. Women are always going to be seen as the worst thing they ever were.
Mm-hmm. Like Monica Lewinsky.
Mm-hmm.
How many years later? And
that's
she's still
society,
a joke.
That's what society does to us. Mm-hmm. And I actually think she's a bad bitch. And are we not going to fucking discuss the fact that it was his abuse of power over her?
An intern.
What a sick fuck. And then, of course, what always happens is that the women that are in the perpetrators' lives have to speak for them. So yes. It was Hillary Clinton that was treated like shit by the media because it was her responsibility to speak on behalf of her shitty, disgusting husband.
My mom still does. My mom still talks about her husband. I'm like, mom.
Yeah, but her husband. So why don't we fucking talk about him then?
Mm-hmm.
How is this her fault?
Exactly.
How is this her fault?
I don't like her because her husband had an affair. It's like, what?
It's fucking ridiculous.
But her emails, everything.
It's so hateful. But the thing is that that's proof of like how easy it is for women to hate other women.
Yeah.
Because we're taught that. We're taught that from such a young age that like it's always a woman's fault. No matter what happens, it's a woman's fault. And so a man could never possibly be as terrible as a woman. And that's why you don't have the Robert Downey Jr.'s in conservatorships, the Kanye West's conservatorships.
Oof, that's another one. It's a recent day. Yeah.
That one's
just set him on his farm in Wyoming and block out all contact. Like that one. I
don't ever want to hear from that man again.
That one can't be saved.
But how is it possible that we can list so many men in the industry who have experienced so much worse and who have their downward spirals
so are much horrible so much things. Worse. Yeah.
And they've done horrible things because let's be real here. She didn't do anything to anybody.
No at all.
She didn't do anything to anybody. She was the victim of her family taking full advantage of her. And to me, it's unfathomable. But at the same time, again, when you compare it to men in the industry, you think, oh, well, this is the perfect thing to take advantage of. I have to say it was a brilliant plan.
Oh,
it was a
brilliant
ploy. I mean, she says it in the book. She's like, my dad, someone didn't even know what a conservatorship was, but they all colluded. And even Jamie Lynn.
Oh God, Jamie Lynn.
You know, she's part of the whole problem as well. And she did that fucking horrible interview. She was like, oh, well, if Britney wanted to be out of the conservatorship, like she could be. Oh, actually, she can.
No, bitch. That's
how
the point.
They were. Are you an idiot? Like, it was just wild to me. But this she mentions in the book, but it had come out previously, which is when she talks about how she wasn't allowed to have her IUD removed.
Yes, 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 yes.
And that's when you realize just how far, how bad it really is when you are contemplating, thinking about, reflecting on what a conservatorship actually is. This is you just not being able to eat what you want or drive your car or spend your money, but you also don't have access to the healthcare that you want. It's your body. It's your physical body. Can you imagine someone telling you that you had to have an IUD?
I know.
Which, by the way, is one of the most painful things that you can be put through. And they don't like sedate you or anything because women's pain isn't real. It's just like when I read that, I was reminded of like, oh my God, that's right. She had mentioned this like a couple months
ago. She wanted to have a baby and they wouldn't let her. And her boyfriends too. Like there was a boyfriend that she was with in the book that kind of like was leading her off of her family's track and they like got rid of him somehow.
Yep. That's always how it goes. The conservatorship was like, no.
No, goodbye. And then one of her boyfriends gave her like an energy drink or something. And they're like, you're taking substances. Oh no, we have to double down on your conservatorship.
That was wild. Like they used these crazy excuses to like hospitalize her.
Yes.
And put her in a treatment center because she had like a fucking Red Bull energy drink.
Yeah.
Like
some crazy shit like from GNC.
It was just such a wild concept to like wrap your head around that at any moment she wasn't allowed to do a single thing that she wanted to do.
I'm honestly surprised that I'm surprised that she didn't like commit suicide.
Oh, same.
Honestly, like I feel so bad saying that, but it's just what they put her through.
Yeah.
Was hell. Like, I don't know how that doesn't break the fuck out of you.
I totally agree. And that's why I think she is such a hero.
Yeah.
And I look up to her so much. And that brings me to the final point and brings it back to us actually, because she claims that it was the Free Britney movement and her fans that kept her hopeful, that kept her alive, that kept her feeling like something good could happen. And the Free Britney movement was such an incredible grassroots movement by Britney fans to acknowledge the fact that this was a woman who wasn't free. This was a woman who needed to be released from this stronghold of her family. And I think it's just a really interesting case study on how social media and activism can actually sometimes come together for good.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's everyone just wants to post shit and they think that by posting something that the world will get better. And it's just not that simple.
No, no.
But in this instance, it was like the message really went from one person to another person to another person and things got better. And then she got this really badass lawyer that was able to get her out of the conservatorship. And my dream, and this is just my fantasy, but my dream is that this lawyer right now in this moment while we're recording this podcast, that he's sitting at a desk with a ton of documents that will criminalize her father for the rest of his fucking life. That's literally yes. My dream. My dream is to see that man go to fucking prison and for Brittany to watch them put an orange jumpsuit on that piece of shit.
Yes.
And that her lawyer will be right there next to her and be like, don't worry, Britt.
We got you.
We got you. How do you not end up in fucking prison?
That's horrible.
From this shit.
Horrible.
And they got so rich. How do you make the argument? How do you make the argument? Oh, this person is too sick to manage her own life, but we're going to put her to work. She's going to do a residency in Vegas
every night. Dance, Brittany, dance.
Like, it's like, that's fucking crazy. So it's just like, all I want is to see that man and the mom.
Yeah, the mom is another one. Yeah, exactly. They're just raking in the cash.
They made so much money off of this poor girl.
I know.
Who really deserved so much better. And I'm just happy to see her free. I'm happy to see her reclaiming her life. Do I watch her videos and think they're weird? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
But you know what? She's doing what I probably would have done when I was like 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I don't think she ever got to live that.
No.
So I'm going to give her a pass.
I will give her her knife dancing, her weird emojis, and all the spins in the world. You know what? That shit's harmless.
It's harmless.
But you know what? At the end of the day,
let that be the final point. Let that be the thing that we remind everybody of. She never hurt a fly.
Exactly.
She never did a damn thing.
No.
And she was dragged through the fucking mud by everybody. Media, boyfriends, family. You fucking name it. They did it to her. And she was like, I'm going to get past this. And that's really what this book is about.
Yes. Because now she's stronger.
Because now she's free.
Than yesterday.
Oops. You did it again.
On that note, cheers to Brittany.
Cheers to Brittany.
Cheers to Brittany.
Cheers to Britt. I've been sipping on this delicious wine this whole time.
Yes. So now let's dive into this rosé. So like I said, picking a wine to pair with Britney Spears was challenging. Louisiana isn't really known for wine.
And I hope not.
No. And when you're under a conservatorship, like she was with her father, you can't really indulge in libations. Mm-hmm. So I settled on more so like a feeling when I saw this label, as opposed to connecting it to her in that kind of way.
Yeah.
So this wine has a really delicate label. It's very dainty. It's almost like watercolor flowers. Yeah. It's very girly, very feminine, kind of like, you know, I'm not a girl, not yet a woman vibes. So it reminded me of the feminine energy of Britney Spears. And there's like a whimsical sense to it, which I feel like you get a lot from her and all of her Instagram posts at times, because
totally.
She's like kind of trying to relive that childhood that she lost in almost a sense there. And it makes me think of her and like her carefreeness now that she's free.
Yes.
And then we touched upon, funny enough, I wrote this little notes earlier that I think that rosé in general is kind of similar to Britney, not only because the feminine energy and the girliness, but also like it can be dry or zesty or sweet and fruity. It can take on different personalities. Like I feel like she almost had to growing up and dealing with all those different and horrible people in her life. So she just had to kind of like fit into whatever mold they were trying to put her
true.
In. Ugh, but so this wine is from Austria.
Love it.
I'm trying to think back if we've ever had an Austrian. I don't think so. Austrian wine on this. Maybe German.
I mean, you've
German,
you've,
if anything.
Yeah, you've definitely had some German wine.
Yeah,
but I can't remember.
I can't remember either. From
if it was just from a German speaking.
Yeah,
or if
exactly.
It was from Germany,
I can't remember either, but this is from Austria. And so a little bit about the region. Archaeological evidence suggests that grapevines have been grown and cultivated in what's known today as modern Austria for over 4,000 years, making it one of the oldest wine-producing countries in the world.
That's crazy. Isn't that wild? I have no idea.
And you don't really think of, like, when you think of wine, you might think of France or Italy or all these other places that kind of claim the glory. But I mean, Austria is one of the oldest.
Old, old world.
Old, old, old. You know that you can't do that anymore? That what? Term's not access. That term is not acceptable anymore.
Old world?
Old world, new world. They're changing it now.
What is it now?
I don't know yet. They literally wrote an article that it's like unacceptable. It's offensive.
Everything is offensive.
It's offensive because there was wine there before. We just didn't talk about it because we have such a Eurocentric wine education system.
Don't edit this out. I want the world to know that I think that's ridiculous.
I know. I know. It's going to be so hard. Like, how are you going to classify things now? But whatever. I'll read the article at some point.
Well, like, the concept of, like, East and West is also, like, offensive. And I'm like, no, they're, like, as someone who actually studied and majored in history of Western civilization, I can explain to you what the difference are in terms of Western civilization and why that is defined in a certain way. I'm not going to do it. But the whole point is that it doesn't have to be offensive. It's just a way of recounting history. I'm done. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Oh my God. And over the centuries, relatively little has changed in Austrian wine. The dominant grape varietals continue to be Grüner Veltliner, Zeigelt, Pinot Noir, amongst others. And they have a fun climate where this wine comes from. They have hot Pannonian weather patterns that come from the southeast. There's the coolness of the forest district to the north, and it all brings in like really cool influences. From the south, they have cool and moist air. And then there's hot summer days with cool nights that are ideal for wine growing. And then Austria today has over 50,000 hectares under vine split over into four key wine regions. This producer is all about tradition and family and origin. This family is three generations strong and they've worked in the Wagram vineyards. Their wines thrive on the fertile loose soils. And the soils are actually from the Ice Age. They're collected at the edges of the primordial sea. So the soil is rich in fossils and minerals that give this like calcareous kind of vibe to it and character. And it also retains water effectively. So it helps with the growing season. This producer practices organic viticulture, sustainability, and they're really dedicated to the quality in their wines, which is all things that we like here.
Love it.
Gotta help the environment because it's burning.
It's dying.
And they're a member of the Association of Austrian Traditional Wineries. I have the actual term here.
I love that you skipped over it.
I skipped over it. Like, I can't even fucking say it. Maritza can say it for me. It's
well, that one's actually kind of tough. It's because Österreich is Austria. So Österreichisch Tradition Weinsguter.
That sounds convincing for me.
That sounds good. That's as good as it's going to get for
that
me.
That sounds really good. So it's basically a community of wineries that was founded in 1991 for the purpose of classifying Austrian vineyard sites and advocates binding quality standards. So like thinking about like CRU systems in France or whatnot. It's like a similar designation. And their wines can be found in selected specialty shops and in cellars and restaurants in 22 countries across Europe and North America. They have quite a little footprint. I'm trying to remember where I got this actually, but I do not recall. It might have been sent to me, but I'm glad it was because it's delish.
It's delicious. It's like it's zesty. It's fun. It's not like a little bitch rosé.
Yeah.
It's like a punchy rosé.
This is like the Instagram of Brittany now.
Yes.
It's punchy.
Yes.
And zesty and knifey.
A freed Brittany rosé.
This is a freed Brittany rosé.
Yeah.
This wine is 100% Zweigelt, which is an Austrian grape created in 1922 by Friedrich Zweigelt. It's a cross between St. Laurent and Blaufränkisch. This wine is fermented in stainless steel and aged on the lees. It's organic, which we love. And for the geeks out there, it's gentle maceration, pressing and cold fermentation to enhance all the pinkness in it. And we've been tasting it, but I'm going to pour us a little tupper so we could get into it.
It's delicious.
It's so good. It's such a pretty color. It's like, it's kind of like coppery, but coral. There's like more pink in it than copper, but it's still like has a pronounced color.
Definitely. It's like punchy salmon.
Yes, exactly. Like a real, like organic salmon or not. Or maybe it's
like wild caught.
Wild caught or something. And it has a nice, like a bouquet of aromas, lots of like red fruit, red berries.
Very floral.
Yeah, there's nice florals to it. Like a bit of citrus, maybe like grapefruit or something. It's nice. It's like punchy on the palate. It's crisp. It's like ripe red fruit, citrus, very tangy, but yeah, fun. Yeah, it's great for, and then it has like a minerality too. And it's probably from those soils that we're talking about. Like it has a nice acidity too.
I love that kind of punchy feeling you get in the back of your mouth.
Yeah.
With like a really minerally.
Totally. Drink. It's so good. It's such a great rosé. And I mean, ironically, we're recording this on probably the most London weather day ever.
Yeah, for sure.
Like it's drizzling. It's cold for Miami. And it's just not a rosé day. But we're making this work.
We're making it a rosé day.
Brightening us up.
I love it.
So it's super good. You could definitely pair this by the pool, at the beach, in a conference room recording a podcast.
Why not?
And like totally goes, I think it could stand up to some like barbecue dishes, some fish, some snacks. It's a nice little on the go kind of rosé. And you could find it online for around $15. So it's a great value.
Really affordable wine.
Very affordable, very delish, great quality for what you're getting. And I feel like that's the kind of thing you get with these countries that you don't necessarily think of top of mind. Like you get more quality and more bang for the buck. We see that a lot here in Germany. I remember like buying a fuck ton of wine in Germany and they're like, that's what we, no, I'm not even going to do an accent. I'm not even going to do it. Sorry. I'm not even going to do it.
Our German followers will unfollow us.
Me. I'm sorry. That's the thespian in me.
It is.
It's really hard to throw that off me. But they're just like ringing up like, I don't know, 8 bottles. And they're like, $75. I'm like, what?
It's crazy.
Mind blown.
And that's another like travel tip, I guess, is that this happened to me when I went to Italy a couple months ago, that when you're in the local area, you know, it's like drink the local wine. Like not only is it going to be an interesting experience, I mean, you're really getting like a local experience, but it's going to be really cheap.
Yes.
I was having Aperol spritzes for like €5.
So cheap.
Because there's so much Aperol everywhere, you know, and like Chianti when I was in Florence, and it was like €3 a glass. And it's just like such a great way to have an experience that is super, super, super curated to you into the local area. But like, it's so true. Like if you hadn't told me about this, I wouldn't have even thought like, oh, well, next time I go to Austria, I'm going to have wine. Like exactly. I wouldn't have even thought that. But now I'm like, oh, if it's $15 here, then it's going to be like
$2 there.
It's going to be real cheap when I go over there. So that's just a fun travel tip. Cause I think we forget that there are lots more wine regions that we don't even think of as like wine regions off the top of our head. Yeah. But when you travel, you're like, oh shit.
It's awesome. No, for sure. When I went to Germany, I just thought, oh, beer. But I got there and I'm like, I love it here. This is perfect. All the wine.
I love Germany.
And fantastic food. I had a Michelin star type restaurant. I'm like, wow.
So underrated.
It's not just potatoes.
It's not just potatoes. It's not just sausage. It's not just beer. It's fucking great. That's another hill I will die on. That Germany's fucking amazing.
Yeah, no, totally love it. So thank you all for joining us as we free Brittany Moore. Lock him up.
Lock him up is a new chant for
Lock
Jamie Spears.
Up. Lock him up.
Lock him up.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe to our newsletter. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us all the stars, all the likes. You could follow us at Pouring Over Pages Podcast on Instagram. You could go to Etsy, shop our merch, do all the things. Give us all the love. Until next time, we see you.
Cheers.